and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. No Conrad today. I have replaced him with someone who is far superior. I'm joined by Mr. Carl Brown.
Hello.
Of Second Thunder, Open Combat, friend of the show, all-round nice guy, really.
Yeah, I think that depends on where you are and when it is.
Yes, I only have to talk to Carl. To be fair, I only have to talk to Carl on the phone, so...
Yeah, you're not trying to keep me on... Well, maybe you will be trying to keep me on topic, so that you'll probably not like it so much afterwards.
So, Carl, as hopefully a lot of you listening to this, is currently running a Kickstarter to put Open Combat into print, something I'm very happy about. And it's doing all right.
Yeah, it's going well. It's getting to the point... Well, it has got to the point where it's funded... And it's going to be in print, and it's going to be a hardback, which was really the core aim of the Kickstarter. So everything else is a bonus now, as far as I'm concerned, because basically people are going to get a hardback version of the Open Combat rules. So that's...
Yeah. As we record, it's got 346 backers and has raised 6,817,
yeah.
Which I think means... Doesn't that mean another stretch goal's gone?
Yeah, it's got the end papers, which normally on a hardback book you have... Like the inside front and inside back covers, which is sometimes just a blank piece of paper there. But you can get them coloured, but obviously it's a cost. So what that means is those get an image of some description on there, yeah. So it looks like it's crossed that funding level now, and it's now moving on to having a matte laminate finish on the outside. So,
okay. Very nice. So what's a matte laminate finish?
GW's 40K codexes, they've got
the shiny
bit and then the yes. really smooth bit. Well, the smooth bit is a matte laminate finish. The shiny bit
right.
is a spot UV. So that is the best example because that's probably the one that most people would recognise. That is the sort of high end of your printing bits. I mean, GW stuff has embosses on and things like that as well, but I wouldn't be bothering heading into that direction. But yes, yeah, so the matte laminates is a smooth... soft finish that you have on them.
Right, okay.
With my designer background, like graphic design background, it's the kind of the feel that you always want. It's kind of that tactile kind of feel of a product. It kind of gives it that edge. So it's
okay, because I saw it and I went, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, well, normally standard hardback, if you just had it just a hardback printed, it'd be a kind of glossy feel, which is just the standard gloss that you get on them.
Yeah.
And your matte laminates are a much more sort of smooth finish. And then what you then do to offset, to sort of bounce off that, you would have the spot UV, which really then zings out the colour. If you put on a spot UV on a photograph or something like that, it really zings it out. And it just gives it a real sense of quality. And it is. It's really good quality stuff when you get to that point. I mean, hardbacks are good anyway, but... You know, you just.
Well, no, I'm so chuffed that it's going to be a hardback.
Yeah, me too. That's what I wanted. I mean, we had a little chat before we started recording, and it's something that I'm considering at the moment because of the cost of producing a hardbacks, which is one of the reasons why I went to Kickstarter. Because of the cost of producing hardbacks going forward after the print run that the Kickstarter generates. Whether I'll be in a position to do a hardback again in the second print run, once the quantity that I get printed has gone off and been sold on, whether that's a hardback or not, or whether it just goes to a softback and remains that way, that's completely up in the air at the moment. So this may be the first opportunity to get hardback and potentially one for a little while before it goes into hardback again. So it's probably the best time to get it, to be honest.
Yes. Yes. Well, and frankly, people should be getting it anyway.
Well, they should. Yeah. They've heard about it. Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of people actually, interestingly, find out about it via Kickstarter. That, you know, they've come over to the website and said, "Oh, well, they just spotted this," and then they've downloaded the PDF edition and said that, you know, a few people have said, "Oh, no, I don't really do books, but you've got the PDF edition," and they bought that one. So it's acted as a marketing tool as much as anything else, which is. One of the strengths of Kickstarter. So,
yeah, I mean that is something I suppose that people don't tend to think about is that just being featured, you know, just having a presence on that website, and you know, people when there's a lot of people who just go through the games section and go, oh, this is a new thing. Yeah. I haven't seen this. Yeah, I can see that.
It's a new stream of content, essentially, isn't it? It's a new media stream. You've got all the websites, you've got the actual retailers that have their sites, you have the producers and the manufacturers that have got their sites. There's the news sites that are kicking around, the video sites and all that kind of stuff. But then I think in addition to that, you've now got Kickstarter and the, as you say, the games section of that. That's just another stream of content that people are processing. It's just this media age, isn't it? And obviously then there's the magazines and things like that as well. So there is constantly going to be new games coming out, and I think Kickstarter is just one of the places that people look for them, as much as anything else.
Yeah. So I do have a bone to pick about the Kickstarter. There's not enough for me to spend my money on.
Yeah, I know.
Why
haven't you given me more? I want to throw more money at you.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it and I read it, and I've already got the PDF, and so I went and I thought, okay, £13. That's what it's costing me to get a hardback book.
Yeah, that's the early bird, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, yeah, but even the non-early bird was only 15
yeah,
quid.
Right. Yeah, well, the thing was, when I set it up, there was the potential that it was only going to be a softback. So if you cost it a sort of top end, a higher level, when it's only going to be a softback, you kind of turn people off instantly. So I made the decision that, well, actually, if it gets to hardback, which is where I want it to be, then if people are getting it at a really good deal, then that's just fine. That's because they're backing it. They're backing it and getting it off the ground. So there you go. There's your benefit, if you like. Because there's no way I could sell it at that price when it goes to retail. So when it comes through to retail, it'll be at least 25 quid as a hardback. So it depends where it goes now, where the actual final cost is. But it's going to be at least 25 quid. So you're getting a massive saving getting it through the Kickstarter, but that's the benefit you get from backing it at the end of the day, because it wouldn't be happening if you weren't backing it. So it's kind of the thank you kind of thing, isn't it? It's the trade-off. So, I mean, the big difference is I'm not trying to shift or offer a load of freebies. So I'm not saying I'm going to give you this figure, I'm going to give you this figure, or give you this, that, the other.
Yeah, no, I guess so. But, I mean, from as I was looking at it, I wasn't thinking freebies. I was thinking, you know, could I throw more money at you to get the micro expansions?
Yeah.
You know, does money help you get the micro expansions out further?
I can understand that. And what it is, it all comes down to is backer numbers. Because any production of any description, if you're going into print, is all based on your units, your numbers. So if you're getting 1,000 printed, or if you're getting 3,000 printed, the unit cost is a big difference between the two margins. And if you only have 500 printed, then your unit cost is astronomical in comparison to 3,000 printed. So the number of backers is actually more important than the amount of money you get. Because if you say you're going to do this product, this product, this product, and this product, and you only have 50 backers, but they all want all those products, suddenly the unit costs for each one of those products are absolutely through the roof, and you've not raised enough to get one of them done, let alone the other three or four. So
right. By
keeping it contained, it's not going through the stratosphere on the sort of top line level of what money the Kickstarter is making, but it is ensuring that the actual one that is being done is funded rather than the funding being split across half a dozen different projects that you only got like half a dozen people going for one of them, and that's actually not going to be able to fund itself. So it's with it being my first experience at Kickstarter as well, I'm taking it very carefully, because it's a big responsibility, because you're taking, you know, people are backing it, they expect you to look after it and make sure as it's delivered. And if I keep it contained, yes, it's in a sense reining in how much anyone can actually individually pledge, but also it's keeping it contained so that the primary objective, which is getting the book printed, is secure and not being split off into multiple little projects that are also going to be printed at the same time. It just keep it focused and therefore controlled, so it's actually going to be delivered properly, rather than splitting it off and then there's delays because actually you've got to raise the money from somewhere else to get that one done and all that kind of stuff. So it's a much more cautious route to this Kickstarter than what people are perhaps used to, simply because of you know, other people have been running a lot more than me and probably have an engine built specifically to do it the way they do it. Whereas this is the first time I've done it, and it's got a very focused intent: get the book printed so that people have got a physical edition of Open Combat to play with. So
yeah, and we were talking before we started recording about the fact that the money that you're getting, actually you don't get anything like that money.
Yeah, it's a funny one. You kind of see that top line figure and you think, crikey, that's loads. It's keep you going for a few months, and it's like, well, actually it's not really mine, you know. It's, you know, the cost that Kickstarter takes, so the Kickstarter fees, there is Amazon processing fees, and there's taxes associated, so all of those reduce the amount you get. So what you actually get in the end is a proportion of what the Kickstarter has raised, and then out of that you've obviously got to pay your production, and that's where you kind of get into that weighing up, how many do you print so you have the stock in hand to be able to sell at full price later, and also deliver your commitments to the actual people who've pledged. So that is a balancing act in itself, and by the time you've kind of gone through all that, there isn't actually very much left, unless you go through the roof. You know, if this one was to go absolutely berserk, you know, 5,000 backers, I'd actually be in a position where I've earned some money for me as well. So, you know, it'd be amazing. As it is, the position where we're in at the moment is it's earned enough to actually put the book into production, get the print run made, get the backers all with their copies at the rate that they've pledged at, and also give me a stock of books to sell through retail and, you know, through shows in the UK and that kind of thing. So it's, again, it's a much slower process, because obviously the money I make will be off the back of the books that I sell in retail level. But that's fine, because the purpose of the Kickstarter was the exposure and getting it into print in the first place. So it's done its job, as a Kickstarter does, but it's not a money-making scheme, if you see what I mean.
Yes, no, I understand.
Yeah, get rich quick thing. It doesn't work that way. It does it literally what it says on the tin. It kickstarts the business. You know, it's using it the way it's supposed to be used, rather than going crazy selling existing product or anything like that. So, which, you know, fair play to everybody that does that, because, you know, that's the way they sort of tool up their system. But that's not, I'm not in that position. I'm simply getting a project started. So,
yeah. So we're 6 months into Open Combat?
Yeah, it will be, I think. It was October last year that the digital edition launched, and yeah, that is 6 months, isn't it? About 6 months. Yeah. So it's going really well. In my head, I had it was going to take 2 years to get the traction that you need to be growing properly. The first 6 months was, you know, you get the early adopters, you know, like yourself and, you know, the guys that you talk to, and then quite a lot of other guys as well, guys over in Denmark, guys in Chicago. There's quite little groups there, little pockets all over the place, actually. There's quite a few of them in the UK, across Europe. There's little pockets of early adopters. And the feedback is brilliant. Lots of people with different feedback coming back saying, you know, oh, this is giving me a chance to play this game that I've not been able to play for years, because they've had an idea they wanted to do, but the games are either too big or they're prescriptive and it's not quite what they want out of it. Whereas Open Combat allows them to essentially stat up what they want and play the games they want, which is what the core ethos of the game is. It's like, you know, play the games you want to play, the ones that are in your imagination. You know, that's what it's for. So the feedback over the first 6 months with the people that have been coming in has been absolutely fantastic. And it is continuing to grow and expand. And what I'm really enjoying seeing is the forum start to have discussions between people. It's still very early on, and it's, you know, it's not got loads of people there all the time. But forums, I think you have to have a massive user base to be able to have a forum that's constantly alight. And at the moment, the forums, little conversations that are occurring in the forums and the questions there, that is really good to see, because it's just, you're starting to see that kind of interaction around the Open Combat game and around what can be done and what people are doing with it. And that's just the start. You know, you can see the kind of beginnings of it starting to snowball. I reckon, you know, as soon as I got a printed edition, I think that's when it will really start to move, when it starts to get out even further. Because that's what it is. It's that, you know, to use one of those analogies, it's that ripples coming from a little pebble in a lake. You know, you throw the first pebble and you get that initial sort of burst, and then it kind of goes on and on and on. And it's that, it's creating it where other people start to throw pebbles in as well. That's what you're wanting. And I'm starting to see that online, where other people are talking about it, and it's not me that's instigated the conversation. You know, it's just started about Open Combat. And that's great to see, because that's when you start to see a little bit of traction. But from a fund, you know, from a funding, getting back to what you said a little bit earlier, the funding expansions, the experience of going through this Kickstarter and thinking about expansions and knowing that lots of people are asking for them and wanting them and everybody's really keen, and I'm very aware that we need to start putting them out quickly to feed it, basically feed that desire. And from our point of view, it's to get people out there playing with the stuff that we've seen and know about. So, you know, I was still to in and fro whether I was going to go digital and print at the same time and that kind of approach. And I think I'll probably revert to my original plan and stick with digital for the initial releases of the expansions and supplements. And then see where we are a bit further down the line. I mean, this is all discussing with the Kickstarter. It's still in, I think it's got five days to go. So I may have a very different opinion if it goes completely silly towards the end of the week. But that's all just up in the air at the moment. So when it comes to the actual expansions, I'm very keen to get some coming through, and there'll be different sized expansions as well. I mean, I call them micro expansions, but it's kind of like a term I've used for them because I don't see them necessarily all being multi-page massive things. Some of them might be 4 or 5 pages and that's it. So there'll be little micro transactions, whereas others might be 20, 36 pages, depending on what it's about. Because some topics require more description than others, and some have got more in them. So that, you know, whether it's scenarios or extra rules, you know, optional rules or the skills and abilities or everything associated with whatever the supplement's about. So some make themselves bigger just on the pure theme or topic that you're discussing within it. So
there does seem to be a demand for certain types of expansion.
There's quite a fantasy leaning at the moment.
That definitely seems to be. I mean, monsters and magic seem to be.
That's right. Yeah, monsters, magic. I know cavalry's one that several people have been in touch about. And there's a few other things as well obviously the experience sort of some sort of experience and campaign system and things like that. So there are quite a lot of things in the mix, and Gav mentioned it on the comments within the Kickstarter itself. It's a little bit of a thorny issue from a point of view of how we order it in the releases, because we've got to bear in mind in the grander picture of the fact that Open Combat is a universal system, so you can play fantasy and historical, and some expansions won't necessarily appeal to somebody who's only interested in playing in an historical context. So monsters, arguably, you could play the idea that these are kind of insanely crazy heroic guys, and you're kind of going into the more the saga heroes of legend almost approach of historical kind of things. It's like they're capable
Grendel.
Of things. Yeah, pretty much. But really, I think, you know, your majority of historical players wouldn't be interested in monsters or magic for that matter. They wouldn't be interested in magic. But they might be interested in, for instance, the first supplement, the swordsman one, which is looking at a particular style of fighter and expanding sort of the abilities. And there's a few optional rules in there and additional scenarios. So that one's much more universal in appeal, because whether you're a fantasy player or a historical player, a guy with a sword with his own little abilities to do things, that is of equal value, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, you see, I must admit, I hadn't even considered that. I hadn't considered that you have to balance those two, I suppose, almost opposing philosophies.
Yeah, I mean, it is in a sense, it's in a way. I mean, it's one of those things, because I think from my experience of, I mean, I've got more and more involved in, or more and more interested in history as I've got older. I was interested in it at school, but not to the extent that, I mean, when you sit at a table with real, you know, dyed-in-the-wool historical players, whatever period they're into, a lot of them, it's like sitting next to an encyclopedia, because they absolutely understand everything, you know, or a great deal of the topic that they're into. And the wargaming is just an extension of their interest in history, which is fantastic, because I love sitting listening to them. You know, it's, very often they get a bit of a bad rep, historical wargamers, too, you know, for being a bit boring, but I find them absolutely incredibly interesting, particularly when it starts talking about the actual weapons of use in the time, and you start to think of the context that the wars are fought in and what was really going on. But then equally, with coming from a fantasy and science fiction sort of gaming background, that's where my kind of real interest lies. whenever I see historical stuff, I always see it with a bit more narrative attached to it than the purely hard historical aspect of it. So, you know, that kind of glorious sword fight. And having done various martial arts and sword fighting and all the rest of it over the years as a sport, I kind of see that kind of that action and glory aspect of it within, whether it's historical or fantasy gaming, that's what the narrative I'd like to see on the tabletop. Because when we're playing games, in my head anyway, I see it portrayed almost like watching a movie in my head. I'm seeing it, you know. I mean, I've heard you guys on the podcast talk about making noises when you're playing, and it's just that. And you kind of get the quips and the movie quotes, and you see those things, those memes going around the internet about what gaming is, you know, this percentage of this, percentage of this, and percentage of this. You know, bad attempts at doing accents from movies and things like that. Well, that's all part of gaming, isn't it? It's like, you know, we've got the intellectual challenge of competing with another person and what they're trying to do. But also inside all of that, there's all the social interaction of that kind of shared cultural references and all the other stuff, you know, whether it's historical references and going, crikey, that's the kind of thing which might have happened if it's a game that portrays it in the right way. Or from a fantasy side, you're kind of creating your own sort of fantasy narrative there with your characters. So it's a bit reminiscent of role-playing games in that sense. So there's a lot going on in games, I think. And, you know, I try not to overanalyze it, but it's just, from my perspective, when I play games, there's an awful lot going on that I'm only aware of when I sit back and think about it. Because when you're in it, you're just having fun. But it's actually, what is that fun? From the point of view of writing games and creating games that are fun to play, you kind of have to sit back and almost abstract yourself and look at it and see what components make a game fun. And there are a lot of parts to it. You know, it's got to be challenging from the point of view of there's enough there to interest people who are interested in picking out combos or challenges or tactical situations. It's also got to have just something that's quick and easy to pick up, because if you're scratching your head and staring at the rule book constantly flicking through pages, it can kill the enthusiasm in the middle of the event almost. So that's one of the reasons why the rules are written in the sense that they are, to keep things pretty much, once you've played it once, you're running. you understand it because the mechanics are so clean. So I do like complicated games, don't get me wrong. I can get my head into them and get really sort of deep into the like analytical side of games. But from the point of view of open combat, this was about getting a fast play game that you can just put on the table, doesn't take up loads of space, doesn't take forever to set up, and it allows you to get that fix in, that gaming, you know, fix or that kind of fantasy fix, whatever it is that you're after. It allows you to get it in quite small space of time, small space on the tabletop. So I don't see it as being the game that everybody plays and nobody plays anything else. You know, it's that I don't have that mindset because I'm a magpie gamer just like anyone else. So I see open combat having a role just like everybody else's games as part of the collection of games that people play, and you get your own experiences from each game, you know, and the kind of players that play them.
Well, sorry to cut across you there, Carl, but we are sort of over time for this episode. So, are you happy to come back tomorrow and do some more?
Absolutely. No problem.
Smashing. So, until tomorrow, I've been Mike.
And I've been Cole.
Bye-bye. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter. We're at Fools_Daily or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.